Vaccine Mandates and the Erosion of Religious Freedom by Kendall Nelson. For many Americans, faith is not a political statement or an abstract idea. It is something deeply personal, woven into family life, moral decision-making, and the way parents care for their children. Religious traditions carry meaning because they are shaped by history, belief, and practice. When those traditions are diluted or treated as interchangeable symbols, it can feel like a quiet loss of something sacred. That sense of loss became visible this past holiday season in Europe, when a public nativity display replaced traditional figures with faceless cloth forms, including an infant Jesus depicted without eyes, nose, or mouth. Officials in Brussels described the display as an effort to be inclusive, yet many Christians experienced it differently, not as a gesture of welcome, but as a removal of the very humanity at the heart of the Christian story. When someone later vandalized and stole the baby Jesus figure, the incident took on an unsettling symbolic weight, reflecting how easily religious meaning can be diminished in public life. These moments are not merely cultural curiosities. They point to broader societal discomfort with religion as something real and practiced. Increasingly, faith is tolerated only when it remains private and detached from concrete choices. When religious belief is pressured to conform to secular expectations or government norms, it loses its standing as a protected matter of conscience. This pattern also plays out in public health policy, and ever more so in debates over vaccine mandates. Across the United States, there is a push to weaken or eliminate long-standing religious exemptions to vaccination, once widely recognized as reasonable accommodations for sincerely held beliefs. This ominous trend asks parents, those who rely on faith to guide medical decisions for their children, to justify their beliefs, where once those beliefs were respected as a matter of principle. The concern is not about rejecting science or public health, but about preserving a foundational American value, the freedom to live according to one's convictions without coercion. Just as religious symbols deserve to be treated with dignity in public spaces, religious beliefs deserve meaningful legal protection. When governments strip away exemptions, what is lost is not merely a policy option, but the official recognition that conscience, especially parental conscience, still matters. Historical origins of vaccine mandates. Questions pitting conscience against state authority are not new. From the earliest days of American public health law, lawmakers recognized that compelling medical interventions raised serious constitutional and ethical concerns. Vaccine mandates did not emerge in a vacuum, nor were they ever intended to operate without limits. The first vaccine widely promoted for public use was the smallpox vaccine, introduced in the late 18th and early 19th centuries. In 1809, Massachusetts became the first U.S. state to enact a statute encouraging smallpox vaccination, and by the mid-19th century, it required proof of vaccination as a condition of school attendance. For decades, however, smallpox vaccination stood largely alone. From the early 20th century through 1940, it remained the only vaccine commonly mandated under state public health laws. In 1905, the U.S. Supreme Court addressed mandates in Jacobson v. Massachusetts, upholding the authority of states to require smallpox vaccination under their police powers. Importantly, however, the law at issue did not forcibly vaccinate individuals or impose criminal penalties. Individuals could refuse vaccination by paying a modest civil fine. The court also cautioned that public health laws must not be applied in an arbitrary and oppressive manner, and explicitly acknowledged that compulsory vaccination could be unconstitutional if it posed a serious risk to an individual's health. Today, this cautionary language is frequently overlooked. Even as the court affirmed state authority, it recognized clear limits on that power, limits grounded in proportionality, medical judgment, and individual circumstances. These principles informed the exemption frameworks that developed over time, and reflected an understanding that public health measures must coexist with constitutional protections. How vaccine mandates function today. Modern vaccination policy operates through a layered system of federal guidance and state enforcement. At the federal level, vaccines are not directly compulsory for the general population. Instead, federal health authorities issue recommendations that function as national standards. These recommendations are translated into vaccination schedules primarily by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, through its Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, and are reinforced by influential private medical trade associations such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP, and the American Medical Association, AMA. Although formally described as non-binding guidance, these schedules carry substantial practical force. They shape standards of medical care, determine insurance coverage and reimbursement, influence hospital protocols, and serve as benchmarks for compliance throughout the healthcare system. It is at the state level that the recommendations become binding. States exercise their constitutional police powers to require vaccination as a condition of school and daycare attendance and employment in certain sectors, including healthcare and military service. Legislation or health department rulemaking transforms federal guidance into enforceable legal obligations, often with limited legislative debate or public input. An expanded vaccine schedule, more mandates. Over the 20th and early 21st centuries, the scope of vaccine recommendations and mandates expanded dramatically. By 1983, children were expected to receive 23 doses of 7 vaccines in early childhood, including DPT, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, and polio, and these vaccines were widely required for school attendance. As of 2025, federal immunization schedules for birth through age 18 had expanded still further to include dozens of doses covering more than a dozen diseases, with more than 50 doses administered before age 6. Most states now require over 3 dozen vaccine doses for daycare or school entry, and many colleges impose additional vaccination requirements for enrollment. These schedules include combination vaccines, multiple injections at a single visit, and vaccines administered within hours or days of birth. Legal protections for vaccine manufacturers, not vaccine recipients, have expanded in tandem with mandates. In 1986, industry concerns about lawsuits led Congress to enact the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, NCVIA. The act explicitly acknowledged that vaccines can cause serious injury or death and replaced traditional civil litigation with an administrative compensation system, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, VICP. Since its inception, VICP has paid more than $5 billion in compensation, despite only granting awards to a minority of claims. Subsequent legislative amendments, administrative actions, and judicial rulings, including a pivotal 2011 Supreme Court decision, have further broadened manufacturer immunity. As a result, individuals alleging vaccine injury are largely barred from presenting their claims to a jury, even when evidence suggests a safer alternative may have been possible. The expanded schedules generally have met with compliance. Thus, as of the 2013 to 2014 school year, more than 99% of children entering kindergarten had received at least one vaccine, even if parents obtained a non-medical, religious, or conscientious personal belief exemption for some shots. Relatively few children were fully unvaccinated. Since then, however, exemption rates have been quietly but steadily increasing, and the minority of families seeking alternatives continues to grow. Families in 45 states and the District of Columbia can seek religious exemptions for school vaccines, and 16 states permit broader philosophical or conscientious belief exemptions. An analysis of county-level vaccine exemption data across 45 U.S. states and the District of Columbia, published in JAMA in early 2026, reported that the median rate of non-medical exemptions to any vaccine rose from 0.6% in 2010 to 2011 to 3.1% in 2023 to 2024, particularly among children entering kindergarten, and with a notable spike in certain states from 2021 on. By the 2024 to 2025 school year, state-level data were indicating that non-medical exemptions had reached 3.6%, with 17 states reporting an exemption rate in excess of 5%. Displeased with this trend, some states have worked to significantly narrow available exemptions. For example, though medical exemptions remain legally available in all 50 states, states have tightened approval standards and imposed more onerous documentation requirements. Physicians also face heightened scrutiny and sometimes professional retaliation for issuing them. Some have lost their licenses after providing exemptions they believed were medically justified. As for religious exemptions, five states, California, New York, Maine, Connecticut, and West Virginia, have eliminated them entirely. See legal challenges and policy developments below for discussion of recent developments in New York and West Virginia. Even where exemptions remain in effect on paper, more restrictive administrative procedures often make them effectively inaccessible. COVID-19 and the collapse of exemptions. The long-standing vaccine policy mechanisms just described federal recommendations, state enforcement, narrowed exemptions, and limited legal recourse helped set the stage for the unprecedented escalation of vaccine mandates witnessed after public health officials declared a pandemic in 2020. In addition, a powerful legal scaffolding governing public health emergencies, carefully constructed over decades, ensured the non-regulation of the medical countermeasures falsely presented as vaccines, but actually functioning as injectable bioweapons overseen by the U.S. military. By the end of 2021, many governments across the globe had implemented sweeping mandates that linked vaccination to access and participation in public life. For example, China, Israel, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and numerous European nations, along with some U.S. states and municipalities, required proof of COVID-19 vaccination to work, attend school, travel, or enter public venues. These requirements displaced long-standing norms of informed consent, conscience, and religious freedom. In this environment, exemption frameworks proved remarkably fragile. Public and private institutions frequently delayed, dismissed, or denied religious and medical accommodations outright. New York City rejected teachers' religious exemption requests en masse, resulting in unpaid leave or termination. Federal employees, healthcare workers, and other essential personnel faced similar consequences. Several states imposed mandates with no religious opt-outs at all, using emergency powers to circumvent constitutional safeguards and the heightened scrutiny that ordinarily would have been required. Legal challenges and policy developments. As legislative and administrative avenues for religious accommodation have narrowed, many families and institutions have turned to the courts. However, the judicial response has been uneven and often reactive, reflecting both the fragility of existing protections and the lack of clear, consistent standards for evaluating sincerely held religious objections. While some courts recognize the constitutional issues involved, others are quite willing to defer to emergency powers or agency discretion, leaving religious freedom dependent on litigation rather than principle. Nonetheless, legal challenges related to religious exemptions continue to unfold in various states. In Miller v. McDonald in New York, three Amish schools challenged the state's repeal of religious exemptions, arguing violations of the First Amendment. In December 2025, the U.S. Supreme Court vacated and remanded a lower court ruling, keeping the case alive. Supporting the appeal, 22 state attorneys general filed amicus briefs, urging the court to uphold religious exemptions and warning against undermining the free exercise of these protections. Children's Health Defense, CHD, has also sued New York State over its elimination of religious exemptions. In West Virginia, school vaccine law historically has allowed only medical exemptions. In January 2025, Governor Patrick Morrisey, citing state religious freedom statutes, issued an executive order directing recognition of religious exemptions, triggering resistance from education officials as well as litigation. In July, a circuit court sided with the governor, issuing a preliminary injunction requiring schools to honor religious exemptions statewide, followed by a permanent injunction in November. That ruling was stayed, halted, the following month by the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, effectively allowing resumed enforcement of the medical exemption-only policy while the litigation continues. During this period, Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. warned that failure to honor religious exemptions in West Virginia could jeopardize approximately $1.37 billion in federal funding for the state, including funds tied to the Vaccines for Children program. In February 2026, 13 members of Congress chimed in on religious liberty and vaccination, submitting a letter to U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi and Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon, urging the Department of Justice, DOJ, to investigate the other four states, New York, California, Maine, and Connecticut, that do not allow religious exemptions. Expressing serious concerns regarding ongoing infringements upon these civil liberties, the legislators asserted, vaccine mandate laws that fail to accommodate religious beliefs represent a clear coercive intrusion on this freedom, compelling individuals and families to act in direct contradiction with their faith. Threatened by the rising pushback, an aggressive AAP issued a policy statement in July 2025 advocating for the elimination of all non-medical exemptions. That same month, AAP also filed a lawsuit against HHS officials over changes to the agency's recommendations regarding COVID shots. Ironically, the AAP itself is now at the center of a federal racketeering RICO lawsuit filed by CHD, which alleges that the front group operates as a coordinated scheme to mislead the public about vaccine safety and protect pharmaceutical interests without disclosing its financial ties to major drug makers and its systematic suppression of contrary scientific concerns. Victories in the courts underscore the potential power of legal protections. In St. Louis, public school employees who had been denied religious exemptions to COVID mandates sued their district, winning a jury award of more than $4 million for 13 employees placed on unpaid leave or effectively terminated, with additional settlements for others. A federal judge ruled that the policy had unlawfully forced the employees to choose between their faith and livelihood, violating the First Amendment. Similarly, the University of Colorado's Anschutz School of Medicine settled for more than $10.3 million, with students and faculty denied religious exemptions. A federal appeals court found the university's policy unconstitutional because it treated secular exemptions more favorably than religious ones and evaluated religious objections in a discriminatory manner. Obtaining religious exemptions. A religious exemption is not a mere form. It is a formal declaration that deeply held beliefs deserve legal recognition. Securing a religious exemption thus requires articulating sincerely held beliefs. Clarity and sincerity matter most. Families should describe how faith informs their decision and emphasize the consistency of their beliefs, but should not cite scientific or safety arguments, bodily autonomy, or generalized moral objections, which are outside the legal scope of a religious exemption. One common basis for requesting a religious exemption involves the fact that some vaccines are developed or tested using aborted fetal cell lines. Every dose of MMR and chickenpox vaccine contains billions of pieces of human DNA and cellular parts from the cell line of an aborted fetus, attorney Aaron Seary recently reminded the public, a fact confirmed under oath in 2018 by the so-called godfather of vaccines, Dr. Stanley Plotkin. Many people of faith had similar concerns about some of the COVID shots. Nonetheless, some religious authorities chose to accommodate government vaccine mandates, and the Vatican went so far as to characterize compliance with COVID vaccination requirements as morally acceptable. Organizations such as the Health Freedom Defense Fund provide model religious exemption letters that can help parents articulate their convictions in a way that aligns with administrative expectations. However, parents should be aware that even carefully prepared requests can face resistance. Navigating these challenges requires vigilance, documentation, and timely action. Families must also be careful never to agree to sign documents that frame their refusal to vaccinate as negligence. The real solution: eliminate mandates, not exemptions. For families of faith, the erosion of religious and personal belief exemptions often reshapes daily life. Parents may face stark choices between education, employment, and conscience. Some turn to homeschooling, alternative schooling, or relocation. Others encounter barriers to medical care or community participation. Children witness government disregard for their family's beliefs. Far from hypothetical dilemmas, these are lived realities for families navigating a system in which exemptions and other religious rights, once understood as essential safeguards, can no longer be assumed secure. There are presently some signs of recourse. In September 2025, for example, HHS's Office for Civil Rights issued guidance clarifying that vaccine providers participating in the federally funded Vaccines for Children program must honor state-recognized religious and conscience exemptions. Secretary Kennedy announced, states have the authority to balance public health goals with individual freedom, and honoring those decisions builds trust. Protecting both public health and personal liberty is how we restore faith in our institutions. As the erosion of religious exemptions highlights, the problem lies not with exemptions, but with the mandates that make them necessary. Although the HHS guidance offers some relief, it also underscores a hard truth. Exemptions exist only because mandates exist. And as long as bodily autonomy is conditional, liberties remain vulnerable. Government authority to dictate what enters an adult's or a child's body crosses the most basic boundaries of personal liberty and parental responsibility. Exemptions serve as temporary protections in a system built on compulsion rather than choice, requiring families to navigate bureaucracies, defend deeply held beliefs, and bear legal, emotional, and financial burdens to preserve a basic human right. Even the strongest exemption exists at the discretion of institutions. We should remember that mandates have expanded largely through administrative rulemaking rather than legislative debate, distancing public health decision-making from democratic accountability. The current system, in which vaccines are federally recommended and state-enforced while manufacturers are shielded from liability, has shifted all of the risk and most of the financial responsibility for adverse outcomes to individuals and families. This did not happen by accident, but reflects deliberate policy choices that prioritize institutional power and protection, while leaving families to absorb uncertainty and harm. The logical and moral solution is clear. Remove mandates altogether. In 2025, the state of Florida signaled its willingness to take this approach and move to end all school vaccine mandates. Without coercion, exemptions are unnecessary, and families can make health decisions grounded in conscience, faith, and personal judgment, without fear of punishment or exclusion. This principle is rooted in long-standing medical ethics and legal standards. A central precept of informed consent is that individuals must receive complete and accurate information about risks and benefits and decide freely whether to accept medical interventions. Consent obtained through pressure, penalties, or exclusion is not true consent. Equally important is the precautionary principle of first, do no harm, which prioritizes preventing harm over enforcing compliance, recognizing that individual responses to medical interventions vary. These ethical safeguards, codified in the Nuremberg Code, establish that voluntary consent is absolutely essential in any human medical intervention. As emphasized by Leslie Manoukian, president of the Health Freedom Defense Fund, bodily autonomy is a human right not subordinate to state power, expediency, or majority rule. The right to control one's own body and that of one's child is fundamental. Mandates reduce parents to instruments of public policy rather than responsible decision makers, replacing consent with coercion. Removing vaccine mandates allows families to reclaim authority, ensures genuine religious freedom, and restores health decisions to those most directly affected. Liberty becomes the starting point, not a concession. Sidebar: the question of risk. Vaccines differ from most medical interventions in one critical respect. They are administered primarily to healthy individuals as a preventive measure rather than to treat illness. As with all pharmaceutical products, vaccines carry inherent risks, including the risk of serious injury and death. These risks are not speculative. They are explicitly acknowledged in federal statutes, regulatory frameworks, and compensation programs. The skyrocketing rates of chronic childhood illness and neurodevelopmental conditions, which have occurred alongside the expansion of the childhood vaccine schedule, powerfully illustrate the issue of risk. The most recent CDC estimates suggest that at least 1 in 31 U.S. 8-year-olds has an autism spectrum disorder. Rates of asthma, obesity, type 1 diabetes, autoimmune disorders, and other chronic illnesses in childhood and adolescence have also increased substantially. The 2018 to 2019 National Survey of Children's Health reported that more than 40% of school-age children and adolescents had at least one chronic health condition, making chronic disease a leading driver of disability and healthcare spending. Secretary Kennedy told a Senate committee in September 2025 that the U.S. is the sickest country in the world, citing CDC data published earlier last year. In that study, 76.4% of American adults, as of 2023, reported at least one chronic illness, ranging from 59.5% of young adults, ages 18 to 34, to 78.4% of midlife adults, ages 35 to 64, to 93% of adults 65 or older. Public health agencies attribute these trends to factors such as poor nutrition, environmental exposures, and sedentary lifestyles. But while those influences are significant, they cannot fully explain either the timing or the scale of the increases in chronic illness. A belated and long overdue concession came in late 2025, when the CDC acknowledged what parents have asserted for decades, that a link between vaccination and autism cannot be ruled out.